Welcome to the Cherry Leaf podcast. In earlier episodes of the Cherry Leaf podcast, we've looked at writing policies and procedures. And the need to update and write policies and procedures is often driven by change within an organisation and the need to communicate that change. But how do you decide what those changes should be and what methods should you use? In this episode, we're going to be talking to Terry Hopper, who is the CEO of Middlestone. And Terry is on the line at the moment. So hello, Terry.
Hello, Ellis.
Best place to start would be to find out a little bit about Middlestone and what you and Middlestone do. So should we start with that?
So Middlestone is a firm of independent business analysts and business process consultants. Our main aim is just to make businesses more efficient. Normally that means finding inefficiencies in business processes and trying to prescribe solutions to those. Normally those solutions are technical. We try and find software or apps or some way of automating the process if possible. Any way really to make the process more efficient.
Process and procedure and task can mean different things to different people. I did spot on your website the definition that you've got for that, that a business process is any collection of linked tasks that together achieve something, anything within your business. The way that we tend to describe it is that business processes are what to do, and then we distinguish between them and procedures by saying procedures are how to do things. So when it comes to the common issues that businesses face with their business processes, what they should be doing, where are the areas where the processes are most likely to need to be changed, from your experience?
Well, normally these are around the interfaces between different departments. So where work is handed off from one department to another, that's normally where the cause of inefficiencies come from. This is normally because one team doesn't really know what the next team is going to be doing with the information. They also don't know why they're handing it to them or what the overall aim of the process is. Very often this is just because of organic growth in the organisation. When organisations are very small, then it's easy to know what the person next to you is going to do, and you can work on ways of making it as efficient as possible so that you aren't duplicating work. As organisations grow, this becomes just more difficult and less manageable. And then as organisations get even larger, then they're split up into different departments, and you might have a sales team and a marketing team who are passing information between each other, and you then might have an accounting team who might sit in a completely different office, and they don't really know what the marketing team needs, and the marketing team don't know what the accounting team needs. By being able to pull together all this information to see a process from start to finish, almost from the customer's perspective, then you're able to see where that duplicated effort is.
That's very similar to our experience. We've described it as black holes in the past, where we've been busy recording and documenting the steps to complete a task, and then there's no indication of what happens next. I remember a project for one client where every new starter would be met by the CEO, and he would tell all the war stories of how the company had grown, but they got to the point where it was just not practical to do that. It was just too many people joining and to have that sort of personal touch. And the need to get things documented. Our background is in recording how things are done. What we don't do is tell people how to make those changes, which is sort of an area that you help organisations with in making those decisions on how to make those changes. And I was interested in the tools that you use to help organisations make that change. One of them is process mapping. So what is process mapping? And are there any other tools that you use to help people make change?
As you said, it's quite different from writing down the procedural notes. This process mapping takes a very high-level view of the steps that are taken. It tries to establish why they're taken and what they're going to do, but it doesn't establish how they're going to do it.
Right.
So in its simplest form, a process map could just be a flowchart showing the different activities that the different members of the team have to do to achieve the objective that they're trying to achieve. That could be any business process. So anything from raising an invoice to establishing a new client relationship, everything is a process. And very often those processes jump through different departments as they evolve. So process map is, in its simplest term, just a diagram showing what needs to be done at each stage of the process to make sure that the result is achieved.
So this is inputs and outputs? Is it like a flowchart in that way?
Very often the activities themselves each form a symbol on the process map. With more advanced mapping techniques like business process model and notation, or BPMN, would also map those inputs and those outputs and the data sources of where people are getting the information they need to do their jobs. But at its very rawest, every symbol on the process map is just an activity that needs to be done by a person. As you get more advanced, again, you'd split those out so that you can see who's performing each task as well, and those are using swim lanes, as they're called, which is just a way of dividing up who is going to be doing the work. And those tend to really highlight, as I said, those interfaces between departments, which is where information is passed from one person to another person. And it's those gaps in the process that can often cause some of the inefficiencies. So it's very important to capture those during the process.
In terms of who can do this, in terms of the size of the business, is this something that you can only do when you're of a certain scale and certain size? Or is this applicable for smaller organisations or medium-sized organisations, as well as the more enterprise, international-type organisations?
Well, there is some benefit to mapping your process no matter what your size. Even a one-man band can benefit from having a process map in place just to help them remember the different steps. A lot of time can be saved even by small business owners by being able to look at their processes and look at what they're doing. More for consistency when it comes to the very small businesses, because you might not have a big team of three or four people or 100 or 200 people doing the same job. But even having those processes mapped out for the very, very small businesses can be helpful to make sure that steps aren't missed in the process. As businesses grow up through micro businesses, then it becomes more important. I wrote a blog article on my website, which I will blatantly plug now, which is on www.middlestonelimited. And the blog there was talking about why small businesses would benefit from having process maps. I discussed four different reasons, which is including being able to train new members of staff so that they can get the big picture as to why they're doing the different steps that they're being taught to do. Also, it helps small business owners in particular to delegate. Knowing exactly what it is they're asking their staff to do gives them more comfort that it's going to be done how they want it, and that they can then keep control of it. That's often a big problem as businesses expand, is management having to let go of control and pass that on to junior members of staff. And having those processes well documented helps ease the process for both the person being trained and the person who's having to do the delegation. Of course, as we mentioned before, with lack of visibility between departments as they get a little bit larger, or even just people sitting next to each other in the same office don't really know what the other person's doing. And having a process map that shows what is going to be the next step after they've handed that piece of information to their colleague can help them do their job more efficiently as well, and to ease tensions between teams. And also, the primary reason that we get involved in mapping processes is to improve them. So by having a clear picture of what the process is at the moment, it's very easy to identify ways that that can be improved, perhaps through wasted activities that could be moved on to a different team or dealt with more efficiently, or sometimes steps of the process that can be removed altogether. And that's universal for small, medium and large businesses.
We'll include a link in the show notes for this podcast episode to that article so that people can read that afterwards. And one thing that strikes me from what you've just said there is, of course, customers, whether you're a small company or a big company, in many ways it's the customers that matter, and you can have pretty much the same types of customers whether you're a big company or small. It's, I guess, the difference in how you react. If you're a small company, it's the personal touch, it's done manually. As you get bigger, you want to automate, you want to delegate, as you say, and get that consistency regardless of who's doing it. When is the right time to do process mapping, and why should you do it? What prompts it to happen? Is it that something's gone wrong, or should it be done regardless of that?
My opinion is that all businesses should have process maps. So a good time is, if you don't have a process map, then now is a good time to get some in place for all the benefits that I just mentioned, including training and delegation. But mainly, as I said, we get involved with process improvement. So it is often because something has gone wrong that a process improvement project will be started. Sometimes that's a catastrophic mistake has been made and management want to make sure it never happens again. Sometimes it's just that a member of staff goes on holiday and things slip and they realise that no one else really knows what that member of staff does. Mm. Or alternatively, it's just because a new member of the team comes in and realises that there must be a better way of doing things than the current way. Or equally, a new team of management come in, perhaps through an acquisition or a merger of some kind, and they want to know what the team is that they've just acquired, how they work and what it is that they do. So that's often a good time to improve the processes. What we often find, though, is that those improvement ideas come from the staff that are doing the job at the bottom anyway.
Yeah.
And very often they're aware that the processes aren't working very well, but they haven't perhaps got the courage to mention those to management.
It actually sounds very similar to the reasons we hear for people wanting procedures documented. There is the aspect of catastrophe, something's gone wrong and they never want to happen again. Another is, you mentioned new management coming in. One we've had is where companies want to go public and they're getting people wanting to invest and wanting to be reassured that the company is run well. And also regulatory, that there's new laws that are coming into place. They have to do things in certain ways. One that I picked up from your website is the lack of time aspect, where people want to move away from spending every hour, every minute on their business and want to get that work-life balance a bit more structured. Process mapping, is there a standard way of doing this? Are there best practices for the way in which to do process mapping?
The normal process is to try and get all the people together that are going to be impacted by the process that you're mapping.
Yeah.
And just thrash out what it is that actually everyone does. For larger organisations, that means sitting in a room with post-it notes up on the wall and saying, no, I do this bit and then you do that bit, mm-hmm. until finally you've agreed on what actually happens. In large organisations that don't have particularly strict controls, it can be that actually the process is being operated differently by different people. So that then becomes the point where you try and standardise on what is going to be the process as it should appear.
Yeah.
But in smaller organisations, that's not really a problem at all. In fact, in most small organisations, I only have to sit with one or two people to capture the entire process. My approach to doing that is to sit with them and say, OK, imagine you were going away on holiday next week. What would I have to do to complete your role? What would you expect to be done when you come back? And how would you go about doing it? I try not to get into too much detail of the how,
yeah.
because, of course, that would be writing proper procedure notes. But looking at the different steps they take so that I can draw that out, very often I find that's a good way, because if you just ask someone what is the process, then they will oversimplify it to you. And they won't tell you all the steps they actually take just because they take it for granted.
Yeah.
They do these steps naturally every day, perhaps several times a day, and so just don't think about what the different steps are that they're doing. And it's only by asking them, no, really, train me as if you're going to be away,
yeah.
that they give you the responses you need to be able to draw an accurate process.
Well, we're moving on to, I guess, this other question of the who question of who should do it. You mentioned getting people into a room and doing post-it notes. Often those things are done well when they're facilitated. What are the benefits from getting an expert in? Is it that top-down view? Is it something line staff can do? From the personnel side of things, of getting it done, an expertise and external assistance, what's, from your experience, is the best approach?
You do need someone to facilitate it, and definitely someone who's not attached to the process itself. Because of those assumptions and the bias that comes in, where you're all talking the same language and where you all know exactly what you all do, it's easy to miss steps because you both take it for granted that the other person knows what you're talking about. So facilitation by an independent member of staff or an external consultant is key to making sure that the maps are done well. It doesn't have to be an external consultant. Of course, as long as the person who's facilitating is independent of the process, and it really can be anyone. The problem is that most smaller organisations just don't have the manpower. They don't have a person who is genuinely independent of the process because everyone gets involved in so many of the processes. Another problem can be with the expertise or perhaps even with the seniority of the person because, of course, management are likely to have an oversight of all of the organisational processes. Management themselves will suffer from the same bias as other members of the team. So getting someone in who's got no history with the organisation, takes nothing for granted, can be very beneficial. Another skill requirement for these facilitators would be knowing a suitable standard to capture this information. So we mentioned business process model and notation earlier on, or BPMN. And so being able to know a standard like that is very beneficial so that the maps can be universally understood.
Sometimes the relationships within organisations, there's baggage. People can be wary of saying certain things to certain people. And one of the advantages, often with a consultant or an external facilitator coming in, is they are coming in without any history. And the classic thing they say about consultants is that they have the ability to say truth unto power, that they can say things that other people wouldn't necessarily feel comfortable saying, or if they were to say, it might get too personal and too personalised. So the ability to do that blame-free feedback. You've mentioned a couple of times business process model and notation. Often a good question with these types of tools and methods is to understand where they come from as well as what they do. So I'd be interested in where it comes from.
BPMN was developed by the Object Management Group, or just OMG. They are primarily a technology membership organisation. OMG has got quite a massive membership, including Airbus, BAE, Cisco, Oracle, IBM, Microsoft, NASA, and several universities. And they get together to establish standards so that technology in particular can be applied across all different sectors. So they're very much from the IT perspective rather than from a business administration perspective. Their goal is just to set standards, and they've got quite a few of them that they've published. In fact, BPMN has been adopted by the International Standards Organisation.
So you can buy the standards for, what, £200 or something like that?
Absolutely. However, the OMG do also publish it free online as well. And I was going to include a link to that as well, perhaps.
Yeah. So it's not proprietary. It's an open, effectively an open standard, and it's developed by collaboratively like other standards are.
Absolutely. The specific team that worked on this includes a couple of business process management software suppliers, including Bizagi and Oracle and a few other well-known names. So they collectively came up with a series of symbols that meant that they could universally describe a process without having to explain every single symbol that they were using. So there's a symbol there to say what to do in case of an error, what to do if something goes wrong, and also lots of different decision markers and things that people would expect to find in flowcharts, but with a lot more depth of almost terminology that you can use to describe your process, which makes it a lot easier to pick up a map that someone else has drawn. If you know BPMN, they know BPMN, then you can pick up a map that they've drawn and know exactly what it is that the process is trying to achieve and where the bottlenecks are in it, because there are symbols there to show time delays and external events, waiting periods, and all sorts of other bits of information, including data sources and inputs and outputs. I was going through a mapping exercise for an old employer of mine, actually, and I didn't want to have to reinvent the wheel or have to explain what the different symbols were that I was using as I was trying to explain different decision paths through the process. So what if this happens, then we'd have to do this. If this happens, then we'd have to do that. What if we found an error further down the line? Where would we have to go? And I realised that I was having to make up my own symbols to show these, which meant, of course, that every time I drew a process map, I had to include a key and a symbol chart for it, and I then had to further explain it to the people that I was showing it to. So I searched around for a standard, and I settled on BPMN as the best tool to help me do my process maps, and I've brought that with me when I set up Middlestone, so that is the process, the model and notation tool that we use at Middlestone.
So the ironic thing would be that you did this exercise identifying the gaps where nothing happens after a particular stage, and the same thing happens after the mapping, that nothing happens after doing the mapping. So having done that exercise of modelling and mapping, what should happen next after that?
Well, that often depends on what the purpose was of drawing the map in the first place. Obviously, we want something to be done with it. We don't want to be wasting our time drawing these process maps or wasting clients' money in paying us to do these things. So we want them to be used. Sometimes when we're asked to make process improvements, then the very first thing we do is to almost tear the map apart and say, well, actually, these are the bits that we don't need to be doing. These are the wasted activities that we've identified. These are perhaps parts that rearrange. So often you end up drawing, as a client engagement, we often end up drawing two process maps, one that shows what the process is at the moment, which is often just known as an as-is map, and then another map to show what it should be. What would be a better way of doing the process would be to cut out various stages or route the work through another person first, or just change the order of events. Another reason to draw process maps is because you want to automate the process, not just rearrange it. But that's what we get heavily involved in, is then looking for technical solutions that can automate various steps of the process. So having a map there that you can then show to software developers and say, this is what we want the technology to do in a fairly high-level form, helps them to at least raise a quote for the work. They'll obviously need more information before they can start developing it, but it gives them a good starting point to show what it is that we're trying to achieve with the new bit of software.
Where does documentation and procedures fit in?
Process maps cover the what and the who as to who's going to be doing the work and what needs to be done, but they just don't go into enough detail to be used as procedure notes. So you'd need someone to then develop the how and the why.
One of the things that comes across often when we're doing policy, process, procedures documentation is that distinguishing between the how and the why. And often the why is the policy, the principles, the ultimate goal, the reasons why you want it done, and then the how is the detail on doing that. A big move within business, within manufacturing, also within software development, has been the growth of Agile and its, I guess, its grandparent or the source of where it comes from, lean methods. Is there a relationship between this and a move to doing things in a lean or agile way?
Yes, absolutely. At Middlestone, we apply a lean process methodology, and we attempt to make all the processes that we work on lean. The whole point of lean is about reducing waste. And so the first step in that is actually to establish what it is you're trying to achieve. What one person might call waste, someone else might call a valuable activity. So the first part is to establish who the customer is for the process, what the whole point of the process is, and then evaluate each step of the process to see whether it's adding value to that customer, whether it's actually something that helps push forwards that objective of providing whatever it is the output of the process is, or whether in fact it's slowing down the process. And so to have a process map in place is almost fundamental to be able to then move on to making the process lean. You need to know what the different activities are before you can evaluate them from a lean perspective. So it's an approach that we take here to then look at which activities then add value after we've drawn the process map. It's then the next logical step to making that process work more efficient.
Lean, there's a lot of measurement and value and bringing problems to the front and then addressing them. And so anything that helps you identify where the problems lie is important. In the wider context of business planning, where does this modelling and looking at the processes fit into that larger, grander planning of an organisation?
Almost whatever the plan is for the organisation, there's a place in it for process mapping. If the plan is to scale up and grow the business organically, then, of course, having those processes mapped out so that new members of staff can be trained and so the managers can effectively delegate is going to be fundamental. If the plan, of course, is to sell, then having robust processes in place is only going to increase the value of the organisation when it comes to sale. You mentioned too before that my website tends to concentrate on small business owners and saying about the quality of life that could be achieved by better delegation and by getting the business under control. Even if the plan is to maintain the business at a modest size as part of a lifestyle business, then even then business process maps can be very useful to keep that control over the organisation and help the business owner maintain the quality of life that they were aiming for, that work-life balance.
Well, the work-life
balance,
is obviously there for people over and above the owner managers, but also people that are salaried. If there's a work environment that isn't nice, where people have to work long hours to fix things that shouldn't have gone wrong in the first place, then that may lead to a lot of staff turnover. And if you have efficient ways of doing things where people don't have to work stupid hours or do things that are monotonous or wasteful, it may lead to a happier work environment and people staying longer within a larger business and not having the issue of having to constantly recruit and replace people that are not happy and have moved on to other things. For others that are interested in this aspect of process mapping and business process modelling and business process model and notation, BPMN, I've got my M's and N's the right way around, where can people find out more information about that?
As we mentioned earlier on, the BPMN standard is available on the OMG website, so that's bpmn.org. The standard itself is 530 odd pages long. But for people starting out with process modelling, then they can start having a look. In the early 20s, there's 13 pages that cover the useful symbols that are used when we're drawing these process maps. And that's a good place to start without getting bogged down in the detail of the standard. Obviously, your listeners are very welcome to read the rest of that blog article that we mentioned there, which talks about the advantages of small businesses in particular mapping their processes.
And we'll include those in the show notes for this podcast episode, which will be at cherryleaf.podbean.com. P-O-D-B-E-A-N is how you spell Podbean. Terry, thank you for going through this topic with us. Thank you for the conversation. It's been an interesting topic, and it may well be one of those that comes up in future episodes. So lovely speaking to you. Thanks, Terry.
Thank you very much.